Welcome to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com, anywhere. Oh, and my good friend, Andrew Sindel of the Metro New York North Chapter of the American Red Cross is here with me today. And it seems like all these disasters just keep rolling at us, picking up greater intensities and more people and more need for the good works of the American Red Cross. So welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Darby. Always great to chat with you.
So, you know, we're all glued to the news about the wildfires. What's an update of what's happening in California?
Yeah, so, you know, it's pretty, as folks can imagine, it's pretty intense, right, with the devastation that's currently there. You know, there's thousands and thousands of structures that, you know, have been destroyed or damaged, and, you know, people with nowhere to stay and no real, you know, plans to what they're going to do. So right now we are operating shelters. So that's one thing that we're doing is we have multiple shelters open for those folks who do not have a safe place to stay, right? So many folks had to get be evacuated. Some Wow. can go back and some have lost everything.
Wow.
So that's really where we are primarily helping with the sheltering and then also trying to provide some financial support so that people can get back on their feet.
Wow. I would think beyond the loss of all the material and the financial and all of that, the trauma to see everything you have go up in flames?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is just the magnitude of this disaster, as everyone understands, is just so immense with the amount of damage that's been done. And then there's also, you know, folks have to be careful with the air quality. So people who maybe are compromised health-wise, you know, they have additional needs. Even, you know, 20, 30 miles away from the fires, the air quality has really been affected.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so that's been very difficult. Of course, the emotional, you know, part of so many folks that have lost everything, it's really is going to be a long-term type of response, and we're going to have folks on the ground for quite a while.
So, you know, there was Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Irene. And years afterwards, I would ask you, and you'd say, well, we still have some ground help doing this and doing
yep.
that. And that's years worth of people still connected to trying to help. When you say it'll be years, any guesstimate how many years that this help is going to be needed?
You know, it's a great question. I think because of the magnitude, it's going to be, you know, multiple years. I mean, just... You know, there were so many different fires, and they, you know, now they're finally, you know, getting under control, but there's still been some, you know, flare-ups in certain areas when the winds pick up. So it's just gone on for so long, and I think there's so much devastation. You know, unfortunately, they're saying more than 17,000 structures
wow.
are destroyed, you know,
Oof.
And of course that's a combination of homes and businesses and, you know, schools, religious institutions, you know, really anything you could imagine. So people's livelihood, their homes that, you know, they've lost everything, businesses that are totally destroyed. So yeah, I would, you know, this is definitely a, you know, multi-year type of response, unfortunately.
Yes.
And we know with the climate issues, wildfires can, you know, are going to be more frequent. So it's something that we really have to start thinking about. And unfortunately, maybe facing the reality that there's going to be more devastating wildfires just with the way the climate is really headed.
Yes. And then a few years ago, I have lost track of how time is flowing with all these disasters. There were the rains in Northern California where all the crops of the vineyards were destroyed. So it's like both ends of the spectrum.
Right. Exactly. Right. They've had some horrible flooding in other parts of the state. Absolutely. So it's really dealing with so many different types of disasters. Like you said, there's hurricanes, fires, major, you know, localized flooding, very powerful winter storms. You know, there were some earthquakes. We even had one in the Northeast. Luckily, it wasn't major, but we had, you know, that earthquake in the Northeast.
So
that
in Boston, 3.8.
Yes, yes. So it's really kind of from all different, different areas of the types of emergencies. And I know we've talked about before that the response to disasters now, we're kind of calling it chronic, in the sense of there's almost always a large, disaster that's happening somewhere in the country, almost at all times, and then many times is multiple, like we had with the hurricane season when we had, the multiple hurricanes that affected multiple states.
Yes. And what's going on in Puerto Rico now? Has the American Red Cross been able to leave, or are they still doing help?
Yeah, so there is still some long-term programming, I think, and work that's being done in Puerto Rico after they had the storms. There were some programs around powers and generators, that kind of work, and then also making sure the water supply was safe there as well. That was another area, and the Red Cross did hire some folks that were kind of, there for the long-term needs and, continue to address those areas and provide assistance.
So, just something popped into my mind of needing assistance. With all the rubble and debris and poor air quality in California, where are they going to get the manpower to start getting rid of it, cleaning it up, putting it someplace?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think there's just so much, material and everything that's been destroyed, and then cleaning it up, and then where do you take it all as well? I think a lot of that work, I think the Army Corps of Engineers and other agencies are focused on that, on actually when that can happen and when, debris can be removed and then, of course, eventually rebuilding. So we don't really have any sort of direct role in that. We're really just supporting the clients and their families, making sure, they have somewhere safe to stay at least for now, and then providing some additional support. So some of that, long-term recovery, financial assistance, and casework, so that we can work with them to see, where are they going to be able to live? Do they have family? Do they have friends in the area? Is there a way they can, rent something, or are they receiving money maybe from FEMA? So there is some, a lot to coordinate, as you can imagine, especially for many of these folks who had to flee pretty suddenly and only had the clothes on their back and maybe a few essential items, and that was it. So I just think the emotional part also of this type of disaster is going to be immense. Folks who weren't directly impacted but live in the area or have ties to L.A., they know folks who were, impacted. So it's really going to be a long-term type of response which will be needed.
So the American Red Cross is really mostly concerned with the human need.
Not
the rebuilding and restructuring.
Right. It's really the mission, of preventing and alleviating the human suffering during the emergency. So, we work very closely with other organizations. So even, if FEMA, for example, if folks are getting support from FEMA, they can still also get support from the Red Cross. Since we're not a government agency, we're able to provide some separate support that folks might get directly from FEMA if they're eligible. So it's really a unified type of mission in the sense of everyone working together to understand where the needs are and what the types of needs are. And then, of course, we have our mission of kind of the things that we're due to help folks get back on their feet.
So when a volunteer is assigned to, let's stay with California because
yes,
it's so clear in our minds, and they don't know. I wouldn't know if I would be eligible for FEMA. I wouldn't, I wouldn't know I have a bank card, which is always with me, but you wouldn't be walking around with all your banking records or your information. They're able with a computer to help a person access that or fill out the forms. How does that work?
Yeah, so there are ways exactly that the information can be, shared so that we can, identify where did people live, with local types of records and with other agencies, so that we are able, to verify to the best of our ability you know, how someone was affected, especially if they lost everything. There are some you know, zoning areas we can talk to, and some financial, some national government organizations as well. But that is one of the difficulties when you've really lost everything and you don't have any kind of proof to say this is where I lived or this who was in my home. So I know that's very that's always difficult.
And so a FEMA check would go to a particular bank as an automatic deposit, and then I assume Social Security for older people would go just directly to a bank. But what if they didn't have a banking card? What if it burned up? They didn't carry it.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the federal aid, I know from FEMA, they can you can often get a check as well.
But you have no ID. I mean, the whole thing just sounds
very
like
difficult. Exactly, because
monumental.
There's so many levels to it, and just, you know, folks, of course, need all the financial help they can get. So there is that. It's that process of making sure you're registered with the right agencies, and that's generally what we start doing during these large events. Is there are some unified offices or locations where people can come and register with Red Cross, talk to someone from FEMA. Maybe if they had a business, there's, you know, the loans, the business loans that they can get to restart their business. So having those areas where people can come, kind of talk to multiple agencies, I think is helpful, because there is so many different things going on and ways that people want to help, but it's a matter of kind of working together to make sure we're providing the right help.
Wow, that's really amazing. I'm thinking when you said, I'll say that when we come back from our commercial break.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Andrew Sindel and Darby of Darby and Friends. We'll be back in a moment. WGCH.com, anywhere. Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com, anywhere. Well, my good buddy Andrew Sindel of the Metro New York North Chapter of the American Red Cross is with me here today on this lovely Wednesday. And I was just getting ready to ask the question. You said someone who had a business could potentially get a business loan to restart. And then I thought, well, restart, but it probably wouldn't be in the location that the person was, because the location doesn't exist anymore. So how do you restart? And who'd be a customer in a devastated neighborhood?
You know, absolutely.
Whoa.
Right. So there's just so many levels to it. Like you said, you know, is there somewhere else they're going to try to reopen their business? Is it, you know, what's the steps that they, you know, even need to figure all that out, right? It's just so devastating, because there are also folks who have lost maybe where they work. They're no longer able to, you know, have employment, and they might have also lost their homes as well. So it's
and cars.
Absolutely.
Oh, transportation.
And other resources.
Oh, my word. My heart just breaks for these people. So tell me about the type of volunteer that would be deployed to something like this, and what training would they receive?
Yes. So the types of volunteers that we have right now on the ground, a lot of the folks are working in what we call mass care, and that's the sheltering part of any type of work that we do. So if we open a shelter locally due to a large disaster, or when we have to open multiple shelters due to these larger events such as the wildfires, we need folks who are trained in the sheltering operations. So that's setting up the cots, registering clients, serving food to folks, kind of all the components of the sheltering, and then also folks that are trained in how we do the feeding part of it as well. So we do have vehicles that will go to larger responses. So we've had a couple in New York City when there was some recent fires, and these vehicles will go and they could provide from the vehicle hot meals or snacks for folks and out in the community. And this is especially in areas where folks are rebuilding or you know, trying to get their life back together. So we train volunteers so they have the skills to be able to help in that, in what we call the mass care area. So that's definitely one of the areas that if folks are interested in being able to help our neighbors, such as during this fire, we can train folks locally so that you have the training, you can be on call locally, and then you can also have the ability to help on a larger scale.
Is there ever a situation where someone thinks they can take it until they actually are in the heat of the battle of, so shall we say, and just say this is too much?
Yeah, so when it comes to the deployments, there's a very rigorous pre-deployment process that we go through. So generally someone, especially if it's their first time deploying, we have a health services volunteer who just chats with the person, makes sure they don't have any health concerns. That could be an issue, of course, when they're deploying. And then we have different hardship codes based on the situation. So, for example, in the L.A. situation, the air quality, right, is a concern. So someone that might have, you know, compromised immune system or breathing-related concerns, we definitely wouldn't send. And then the volunteer for their deployment before they go, they also can talk to someone from our mental health team and from our deployment team just to ask any questions and kind of, you know, give them some local resources. So while they're away, if they're, you know, feeling like they need someone to talk to, they could reach back out to someone from the local chapter. And then the other thing is when we do deploy folks on the ground, we also have a team of volunteers that are there to support the folks who are deployed. So it's kind of an internal team of volunteers. We have, of course, many folks helping clients, but there's also a team that's making sure those who are on the ground, you know, have their health needs met. You know, are they having trouble, you know, finding the medication they need? Or if they're not feeling well, they can actually go talk to a nurse. And, you know, if someone is sick, we're able to sort of quarantine them and keep them away. You know, maybe they work from their hotel room until they're better, things like that.
Hmm, that's interesting. Do you require that people who are heading off to be deployed have COVID vaccinations?
Yes, so at this time, there's really no direct requirements anymore for vaccinations. It's really up to the individual. At some deployments, you know, especially one like this, folks would, when they're outdoors, wear a mask more for the air quality issue, right? So when they're outdoors in an area that might be near to where the fires were, a lot of folks would wear a mask, although it's not required for this type of operation. And the other amazing thing was for the wildfires, over 12,000 local folks raised their hand and said they wanted to help.
Wow.
The American Red Cross during this response. So they were previously not trained to work with the Red Cross, but we've been providing quick training for them so they are actually able to help in the shelters. So we've really been able to leverage people from California that said, you know, they know people affected, they want to be able to help, and we have them helping us in our shelters and helping give out supplies and also moving a lot of our supplies. So it's been a tremendous response. I think the biggest I've ever seen or heard about when it comes to local citizens saying they really want to be able to help and have come through the Red Cross and registered with us.
It really gives you hope in mankind, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, that's really, it's true. When there's these types of events, especially when they're so often, we have some amazing, you know, volunteers and staff who deploy for weeks at a time, and that's really the bright side, I think, right, of so many of these responses. You do see the positive in those that are just willing to give of themselves and do whatever it takes to be able to help others.
That makes me feel good. That's really, you know, the mission of Darby and Friends has always been a half an hour of good news.
Absolutely.
And this is always such an uplifting moment, hearing about not just right here in Greenwich in the Metro New York North Chapter, but throughout the United States. And also, now, I know at holiday times there are moments when cards are sent. Will there be any Valentine's card sent, or is that kept more for the holiday like Christmas? And
yeah, that's a great question. I think the majority of those, yes, usually around the holidays. So around like Christmas time and you know, around Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would always urge folks to go to our website if they are interested in supporting, you know, whether that's they want to support financially or they're interested in donating blood locally or signing up to volunteer or even just following the Red Cross, you know, social media platforms, because that's where a lot of the stories and information is shared, and folks can look at that. They can even reshare some of the things that the Red Cross is doing, so folks are aware of, you know, what the resources are. I think a lot of times it's just a matter of getting the word out to people who are affected as to what services there are, and that's something that, you know, we always tell people to call 1-800-RED-CROSS if they have questions, or redcross.org, where they can look at the volunteer opportunities. They can see how they can make a donation to continue helping others, as well as if they want to volunteer. And then there's the redcrossblood.org specific website, which tells you how you can, you know, donate blood locally to support someone in need.
And so since you're commenting on donating blood, what are some of the opportunities?
Yes, absolutely. So we now have our donor center in Greenwich is actually operating multiple days during the week and on Sunday. So that's one great opportunity to donate. It's 99 Indian Field Road in Greenwich. And those drives, like I said, are multiple days during the week. And you can actually go to redcrossblood.org, where you can see the schedule, when it's offered, and how many openings there are. So we have that drive on Thursdays from 7 a.m. until 3 p.m., on Sundays from 7 a.m. until 3 p.m., and Mondays from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So, and Tuesdays as well from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So some great opportunities if you want to come right to our office. That's the state-of-the-art, I would say, donation center. It's really beautiful. You can make an appointment online to donate. And then, of course, we do have our community blood drive. So I know on Sunday, February 2nd, on Monday the 3rd, so Monday, February 3rd at the Greenwich Reform Synagogue, 92 Orchard Street in Koskob, they're having a blood drive from 1:30 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. And then on Wednesday, February 5th at the West Harrison Senior Center, so that's in West Harrison, New York, 251 Underhill Avenue, and that's from 11:30 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. So there's many opportunities to donate, and like I always urge folks is to go to our website, redcrossblood.org. You put in your zip code, and you can see the drives and what slots are available, or you could download the Red Cross Blood Donor app, and if you've donated before, you can log into your account and also make an appointment online.
And that really is the heart of the American Red Cross, is the donating of the blood.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of our, you know, our largest ways that we also are able to provide support to folks in our humanitarian services. So one of the ways we are able to support our clients is with the blood that is, you know, sold to various hospitals to use. But that all a lot of that comes back to support our work and helps us respond, especially to these large disasters, which cost millions and millions of dollars, not only the cost for getting our volunteers trained and out in the field and housed, but obviously the financial support we want to be able to provide for clients is so key.
And is, how do I put it, all the blood just goes domestically, or does any of it go to the armed forces wherever they are?
Yeah, so the most of the American Red Cross, the blood does go, you know, in the U.S. and stays in the U.S., but there are some ways that we do share the blood with, like, other organizations or with military agencies if blood is needed overseas. There is sort of like a mutual aid agreement. And, you know, if a location or a hospital that, let's say, you know, has a contract and receives blood from the Red Cross, and we're running low on a certain blood type, they can request other blood types as well, and we're able to help facilitate that. So there's a pretty large international and national kind of system where some of these resources can be shared, especially if one agency is really, you know, in need of a specific blood product.
Well, you are just the best representative of the American Red Cross, and most specifically of the Metro New York North chapter of the Red Cross. And it has just been delightful and informative and uplifting talking with you today. So thank you to Andrew Sindel. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com. Anywhere.